All right. I'll give this a minute as it gets streaming to YouTube, and then we will dive in. If you are just joining in, then welcome. I can see there's starting to be eyeballs on the screen here, so I think we're looking good. Okay. All right. So everybody, welcome to the stream. I have a lot of guests lined up, and the whole idea behind this stream is why are we bullish? And holy shit, are we bullish? Bitcoin blasted through. It's kind of popping around 15K today. In Canada, it almost went over 20, just a dollar shy. It hurt my soul to see it just tap that and then go back down. But yeah, things are looking good. I'm excited. So what we're going to do is I will intro the guests in just a moment. But first, we're going to do a little intro. This is new to me. I have not done streams like this before, actually live. So bear with me if I'm figuring out things as I go. But nonetheless, very excited. So let's dive in.
HODL the Bitcoin.
All right. So before we dive into the actual show, I just really quickly want to give a shout out to sponsors of the show. So let me just bring that up. You cannot hear me. That's okay. Now you can. Okay. So everybody, again, I'm learning here. But anyways, shout out to sponsors of the show, Lend.io. This is where you can use your Bitcoin for a variety of different services. Of course, they've got their Bitcoin-backed loans. If you're in a pinch, you need dollars, but you don't want to sell Bitcoin, this could be an option for you. It's where you use your Bitcoin as collateral to get a Canadian or US dollar loan. Obviously, do your own research, but if you're in a pinch and you don't want to sell because it's taxable and because you're worried about having to buy back at a higher price point, could be an option for you. Of course, they've got their savings accounts and B2X offering. You can check them out, link in the show notes down below. We also have the legends at Crypto Cloaks. These guys are pumping out awesome swag with their 3D printers. They've got lightning shells. I've got the Triton on the way. The Bitcoin grenades are incredible. Check out their stuff if you want 5% off, code BTC Sessions at checkout. Of course, we have the Kobo Vault. I've been using this for a while now. I love it because it's air gapped. It has Bitcoin only firmware. I recommend you go that route. And I obviously love that it's interoperable with some of my favorite wallets. Obviously, Bitcoin Core, Electrum, Wasabi Wallet, Blue Wallet, all of my go-tos. So be sure to check them out. Link for that down below. And finally, if you're living on Bitcoin like myself, you got to find interesting ways to make it work. And BitRefill is that for me. You can get just a plethora of gift cards for whatever you need there. So be sure to check out BitRefill as well. They are linked down below. And with that, I'm going to get rid of this screen and I'm going to start bringing in some guests. I've got some absolute legends here. So first up, I'm going to bring in Guy Swan here, and I'm gonna let you introduce yourself. Just let people know who you are.
All right, good to be here, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, welcome. Chatted. Absolutely.
I am. For anybody who doesn't know, I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else. You know, host of Bitcoin Audible, that has almost 500. Like we're getting close to 500 reads. Available to listen to for all the best Bitcoin works out there. And then, you know, 50 or so conversations and solo episodes and all that good stuff. And also co-host of Shitcoin Insider, which is our new show that I've been having a lot of fun with, and some stuff coming on the horizon there.
I have not seen or heard that yet. I've got to get on that. Shitcoin Insider. That sounds like it's going to be just a wealth of knowledge.
it's like, you know, like there's so much just fantastical things happening in the shitcoin space, but it's like, it seems like a huge distraction, but sometimes like you just got to know what's going on. So, you know, we sift through the shit to find out what all the inner workings are over there, and talk about it. And it's a good time.
That's beautiful. I love it, man. You're doing the community a service. Okay, I'm gonna bring in another guest here. This is Jesse Berger. Welcome to the show. Let everybody know who you are. You were just on the show. We had a great chat. Go back and check that out. But Jesse, take it away.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. I feel like I was on yesterday. So my name is Jesse Berger, and 2 weeks ago, you would not have known my name in Bitcoin, but from out of the blue, I emerged with a brand new Bitcoin book called Magic Internet Money, a book about Bitcoin. And if you are new to Bitcoin, I would say, I think this is the fastest way to get caught up on everything Bitcoin that you may need to know. And if you're familiar with Bitcoin, it's just a great refresher on a lot of arguments. I'm sure you'll find some pearls in there. I put a lot of time and effort and care into it to make sure that it was actually like an enjoyable and uplifting read. So yeah, check out my book, and yeah, happy to be here. Let's do it.
Yeah, I want to highly recommend.
Really quick, I've been reading the book. I haven't had a ton of time to devote to it, but I'm absolutely loving it. Like just the way it's written and like the analogies you hit and the way you explain it. Oh, it's great, and it's super entertaining. I'm loving it. I'm only about like maybe a fourth of the way through it or something right now. Really enjoying it, man.
Thank you. I second that. It's broken down so well. And there's a lot of points where I said this to Jesse in our interview, but I'll get to a point and I'll be like, oh, there's that thing that I usually stumble over explaining for 20 minutes and it's summed up in a single paragraph. It's beautiful. So Jesse, congrats. Let's add in another wonderful voice. Christopher Gimmer, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Glad to have you. Let everybody know, I guess, kind of who you are.
So I consider myself, I guess, an entrepreneur. So we run a software company called Snappo, which is an online graphic design tool. And earlier this year, we put over 50%. I wrote an article about the reasons for why we did that, which was.
I think you're cutting a little bit, Chris.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I think it was just a bit of a connection, unless anybody else got that. But anyways, can you just reiterate, you put how much into Bitcoin out of your company?
Yeah, so we put over 50% of our reserves into Bitcoin. And I wrote an article about the reasons for doing that, which was pretty well received, and been sending that around to as many people as I could. And been falling harder and harder down the rabbit hole. And we actually just released a Bitcoin dashboard just a few days ago at bitbo.io, if anyone wants to check that out.
Awesome. Yes, I did read your original article. And honestly, it's like, I kind of look at it as potentially one of those things that you can send to anybody to be like, that's just onboarding, and be like, this is why Bitcoin. I think it's again, an excellent resource for people. So thanks for,
I saw Chris, you had your little video about how to put, the Bitbo app, like on your phone, that video you tweeted. So I did that. Now I find I'm checking it all the time ever since I've done that.
Yeah, it gets kind of addicting, especially on a day like today.
So there's an app version of this? Because this is really cool. I like this dashboard.
So if you're on, I think Android's the same, but if you're on an iPhone and you just, you know, type it in your browser, if you click the share button, and then there should be a button called add to home screen, and then it'll essentially, then it essentially functions like a native mobile app.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, yeah.
Awesome. Cool. And we got one more awesome voice to jump in here. We have Jason Townsley. Welcome, buddy. You hit me up on Twitter, I think one of the quickest to be like, yo, I'm down. I'm going to join the show. So yeah, welcome, man. Can, Yeah. Can you let everybody know who you are? What brings you here?
Yeah. So my name is Jason Towsley. Sorry. I'm from Windsor, Ontario. And I'm just basically right around January, I made a decision to start up a consulting company that really helped out companies like small and medium to adopt, whether it was blockchain or Bitcoin adaptation within their company in terms of like their long-term strategy. And as I got exposed to the Twitter sphere that was the Bitcoin maximalists, it was slowly like just like a brotherhood that I never knew I was really a part of, but like it was just like sucked me in, and I've been kind of just like attracted to it. It's like the most successful relationship I have going on right now, I guess you could say. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
That's great. Awesome. So yeah, like I was saying in the beginning, this is basically a chat about why we are bullish. And I think there's a lot of reasons to be bullish today. Things have been going crazy. And we're basically, the format is going to be, we're each going to drop a reason why we're bullish and kind of quickly outline it. And then we're just going to kind of dive into a little bit of a riff on that. So I wanted to start really quick, just with a quick screen share of something. And it'll be probably kind of small. Maybe I can, I don't know. How do I spotlight this? I have no idea. Anyways, this, even though it's hard to see, this chart is actually looking at 2016. And so there was a peak earlier in the year, and then kind of a period where we kind of had a bit of despair. And then as soon as we broke through that previous peak, in a matter of 2.5 to 3 weeks, we reached our previous all-time high. It happened very, very quickly. And, you know, we had a big spike back in 2019. We had some spikes earlier this year, but we've kind of decisively gone above that. And I'm curious if history will rhyme as it often does when it comes to Bitcoin, and this epoch will be no different. And I'm honestly bullish as hell, because again, I really see the similarities between now and 2016 in terms of sentiment, in terms of just kind of the market you know, when you're in a bear market, there's bullish news, but the price doesn't reflect that. But now we're starting to see kind of mainstream media pick up on stuff again, because the price is there and the fundamentals underlying it are there. And yeah, it seems very, very similar to 2016, when we were starting to get close to previous all-time highs. And it's not financial advice, but holy crap, I feel like we're headed for another 2017. So maybe I'll pass it down the line and just kind of get thoughts on just how fucking bullish everybody is. So maybe I'll go to Guy, and then we'll move on from there.
Yeah, I'm bullish in all the ways. All the ways that you could be bullish, I'm bullish. The thing that I'm particularly excited about right now is Lightning. I am just absolutely stoked about it. And particularly with a lot of the developments that have happened very recently, and the services that have come to like onboard people, and kind of like what Phoenix and Breeze has done. Oh God, I could talk about it for 13 hours. But as far as like the price or whatever, as I've been talking about in our crew or whatever, I legit have thought since the March crash and that just steady, strong rise right back for like 9,000, 3,000, 9,000. And then we went right back to stable. And that was like a month, because like a month and a half or whatever that happened. That was the most bullish thing for me ever. I was like, shit, I think we're going to hit all time high this year. And I've been saying that basically since then, and I still think it.
It's funny how crazy people think you are when you're saying that in like a dip down to 4K in March. Yeah. And you're like, nah, we'll be back at all time
high before the end of the year. Yeah. I still think it's well within reach. And unless, you know, some crazy legacy market liquidity crisis happens and we have to, you know, go through another month's recovery or something, there's still, you know, potential like something that gets in the way, but No, I'm really bullish right now.
Well, you look at the last week and you see how we just like closed the gap and jumped from 10, 11, 12K and suddenly we've woken up. We're at 15K, right? It just happens. And in terms of the rhythm and rhymes of, you know, price history in the past, Ben, I wasn't necessarily around at the end of 2016, but I've, you know, looked back at it since then. And it feels like, at least when I was paying closer attention at the beginning of 17, that sort of resilience in Bitcoin's price, that it feels like it's putting in that sort of firmer and firmer floor, and then the floor starts elevating little by little. For if you've been around long enough and have gone through the peaks and troughs, you start to really feel that footing building underneath, and you know that it's just coiling to jump up, right? It's almost like this gut feeling that you just know and feel is happening, but it's because of all these fundamental reasons, right? There's, you look at every argument idea down the line and Bitcoin just wins in every case. There's no reason not to be excited, not to be bullish about it. And so, yeah, it's very interesting this time around to have, okay, I've lived through this bear market, and now to sort of feel that, you know, wellspring building underneath us.
Yeah. How about you, Chris? Are you feeling pretty good given your recent moves with your company and like having seemingly come through the bear market ready to be experiencing quite the opposite? How are you doing?
Yeah, it's I'm a bit late to Bitcoin. I first heard about it in 2017, and then 2019 is when I really, I guess, really come on board, started buying personally. And then it's, you know, I initially, like a lot of people, you kind of look at Bitcoin as, you know, like a hedge or a speculative kind of thing, purely from like an investment standpoint. And then when we put, when we essentially bought it with the company, that's when, you know, I had gone so far down the rabbit hole and was so concerned with what's happening in the global economy that I really started to view fiat currency as more risky than Bitcoin. And you know, I think that's just playing out like right before our eyes, which is crazy. And so obviously, the move in the company and seeing our cash reserves, double from where, you know, a triple where with our first buy, and you know, we put a big initial position, and then we've essentially just been buying on a, you know, biweekly basis as the cash flow comes in. You know, when more you can't argue with the number go up technology, right? And I think it's just going to really start to catch people by storm in this cycle.
Yeah, 100% agree. I'll toss it over to Jason now. How are you feeling, man? Like, what's your perspective on where we're at right now?
It's funny because it's very difficult to make an additional point with like and weave it through all the good points, but from like an ex-athlete's perspective, and then also with an entrepreneurial standpoint, like to me, it's being able to show an individual or company from A to Z the proven track record of how it's been set up and it's delivered on what it's been set out to do. Like to me, that is the easiest way and the biggest bullish point for me, is because I can get behind just like any product that you're behind, that you are passionate about. It's because it's delivered an experience or it's had a consistent, you know, kind of output. And when it comes to Bitcoin, it's so easy to an individual from A to Z how to utilize that value. And that's super important right now, where people are in a standpoint where they're not trusting in nearly anything. So for something to be that definitive, to be able to direct, you can just hand, you know, hold their hand up and just follow them to the point where it's definitive and being able to walk away from that, it's easy to, you know, explain to people and then see all the different bullish ideas that are coming out of that value.
Jason, yeah. You mentioned are you an ex-athlete, you said? What sport did you play?
Hockey. I went on a scholarship to Robert Morris, and funny enough, he was the financier of the Constitution in America. So it was in the States. So I got to experience, and I graduated the year that the economic shut, or essentially like the economic crash happened. So I was like ready to go. I was like, oh, I'm, you know, ready to take on the world. And then all of a sudden there's just kind of nothing out there. Like everyone's just kind of like, let's settle down now. And so to me, being a Canadian in America and then coming back to Canada, I saw the interchangeability of like just the knowledge and then being able to execute and get a result. And then once I found Bitcoin, it, to me, that was just the way of just being able to kind of marry everything together, to be able to be like, doesn't matter if you learn economics in Canada, America, wherever, if you're looking from an A to Z execution, like, and again, it, I was relatable from the hockey standpoint, just working, you know, working on the off season and then executing on the regular season. It was just a no-brainer to me to just kind of really jump into it.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, we're gonna dive into now Guy's point. He was talking about Lightning. Now, before we do, everybody watching, if you're watching on YouTube, please do hit like a big thumbs on up on this, because the more you do that, the more this bumps it up in the algorithms, gets it in front of more people. Give it a share. If you're watching on Twitter, retweet it, whatever you need to do, get this out there. We've got like, we're popping between 60 and 70 live viewers right now. You know, the more you do that, the more we get live. So, Guy, you were talking about Lightning, and I've got to agree, there's been a lot going on lately, and it has become simpler and simpler. I can recall back to a couple years ago, you know, when you could first download a Lightning wallet on your phone and start playing around, and it was not easy. And the change in the past 2 years has been insane. So maybe you can dive a little deeper on that, and then we'll all chime in.
Okay. So the major shifts have been in from like basically manually making the protocol work to hiding it all in the background. Like, you know, people talked about like one of the biggest complaints, like I did very, very early on. I did an article. What was it called? Don't count your FUD before Lightning strikes. It was 15 of kind of like the dominant complaints, quote unquote, about Lightning, that like any sense of just like how the technology and protocols evolve, you're like, either A, they were complete nonsense, or B, it's clearly just an engineering problem that is fixed with time. And we're kind of past basically all of them. And one of them was, oh, you have to explain to somebody what a channel is. And that's really where we have landed today, is that a lot of the major improvements that have happened recently are in completely obscuring away the whole idea of a channel. Like Breeze and Phoenix Wallet, for iOS and Android respectively, you don't have to know, like it just opens channels on the fly based on the payment that you need to receive. And you don't have to wait for it anymore. This was actually a huge update that happened with Breeze very recently, that you can actually receive a Lightning payment in a channel that you don't have yet. And what they will do is they will publish, you pay a 0.1% fee to receive the payment, so that they can open a channel on your behalf, but it's a, you know, quote unquote turbo channel is what I think the actual spec is called. Basically, you know, it's an off-chain ability to update, like, and sign a new transaction. And they basically just sign it over to you before the confirmation. And if you spend it out at that point, well, then you're just trusting them less, like anytime, like for any amount that you have in it. So it's actually not a bad thing for you to have access to it immediately, because then you can actually lower your trust with them by just spending it somewhere. But in the actual protocol, like in the actual wallet, it all just vanishes. Like you could just receive payment, you send payment, and it doesn't matter the amount. You don't have to know that you have a limited amount of bandwidth, quote unquote, in your wallet. Like it just works. And we've kind of reached that point, and I use it every day now. I remember there were times where I would try to figure out how to make use of Lightning. You know, I'd be looking for ways like, oh, can I send this somewhere? Or maybe I can get a gift card on BitRefill or something like that. And I literally use it every day. I pay two people for work. I pay a guy who does website work for me. I pay a really good friend who keeps up with like posting and formatting and stuff. I pay both of them over Lightning. I connect it straight to my bank account with Strike. And I do at least half, probably two thirds of what I spend through Fold. If I can get it on Amazon, if I can get my coffee at Starbucks, I go straight from my bank account to what I am spending on. And we're remodeling. I do a lot of house remodels, so I'm remodeling my closet. I buy it all at Lowe's instead of Home Depot because I can get 4% off on Fold. And I spend it and I do it live. I do it like while I'm sitting in the line. Like I'm just like, I fill up my cart. I know it's like, okay, so I'm gonna need like $150 worth. I got $152 here. I get $150 worth of gift cards and then just scan it at the thing. And I just do it all live. I don't use my card anymore. I use my phone and Lightning. And it's amazing. Like, you know, the future is here. It's just not evenly distributed. It's landing and I can use it all the time and it's getting easier every day and these new updates that are dropping. Like I'm so bullish on this thing right now.
Yeah. I've got to say the experience has been insane. Like Breeze, you were just saying with their updates, I just did a video, an updated video on Breeze wallet the other day and it's seamless. Like if somebody that you're dealing with wants to send you Bitcoin and they don't have Lightning, you show them a regular Bitcoin address and it does a swap direct into Lightning. And the inverse is true too. If you go to pay somebody and they don't have a Lightning wallet open and they only have a regular Bitcoin address, it'll auto swap for you. Everything is just kind of like pulled to the background and you don't notice a thing. And it's so much easier to be like, well, I'm going to be spending a little bit, so I'll just plunk a couple $100 in here for the next little bit. And most of my income is Bitcoin now, the vast majority of it. And so, you know, I'm like as all in as you could be. And so that necessitates at certain points that I do need to spend some money. And so that's a huge bonus for me to be able to pay a one-time fee to get it onto a Lightning wallet and then have it there and accessible and basically instant and nearly free. So I don't know about I'll kind of leave this open, but has anybody else had some experience with Lightning? Are you looking into it? Is it relatively new to you? You haven't dove in yet. Anybody can jump in.
I think in terms of just finding a utility where there was kind of we're all bullish, so we see a very perfect outcome of what Bitcoin is. But I think what Lightning added was the Lightning Network was something that just kind of said for the people who were like, well, what about those transactions? Like those certain the what ifs, the what about isms that whatever there was with Bitcoin, the minute I was exposed to the Lightning Network, I was like, there, they've got that rounded kind of approach and that makes it work. And mm-hmm. So I was able to at least conceptualize immediately in terms of the end goal on, you know, something in terms of a smaller value and being able to execute. I was like, there it is. Like how can it not lose? Like, I don't know. Again, I could be wrong, but it seemed like that was just A to Z. That was the missing for a little bit, at least. Like I wanted to see how it goes. And now that the more and more, like you were saying, the more and more you see those working examples, the more and more optimistic I can't help but be.
So I admit to not, you know, having really used Lightning at all at this point. I've been sort of a holder with coins in cold storage for a little bit. And obviously my head been in my writing. But the idea of Bitcoin and what it's trying to the idea of Lightning and what it's trying to achieve to me seems to be, you know, sort of very, very important to the future of Bitcoin. It's not the deciding factor, because if we sort of just stopped Bitcoin development in all its facets where it is right now, it still works in all the ways it's supposed to work. Lightning is a way that, you know, we're trying to improve it and make it easier and more functional in different ways and faster, of course. and with more capacity. So, and we knew from the get-go as well, right? Hal Finney, you know, a decade ago, 12, 11 years ago, whatever it was, you know, basically at the inception of Bitcoin was talking about how the base layer of Bitcoin was never designed or should not be designed to encompass every single transaction on the planet. It should not be designed to capture the $2 coffee purchase down the street. You have layers for that. That's how the existing financial system is built. If you want to settle a transaction because you're going to buy a house or a car or some big ticket item, then okay, that's when you're going to need a sort of higher degree of security and certainty. But when it comes to these smaller transactions where it's like cash in your pocket, and you know, okay, if someone mugs you and takes the cash in your pocket, like it's not the same as taking all of your savings, right? It's not the same as taking the money you have locked up in a vault. So you're, when you use Lightning, you're taking a little bit more risk, but it gives you that much more flexibility and just the ability to do so much more than we can do right now. And when I say so much more, I'm referring, I guess, to volume, but also, you know, and Guy would know more about the potential utility of Lightning. So yeah, that's what gets me excited, is that we're good as it is and things are getting better.
Yeah, totally agree. How about you, Chris? Have you had any experience with Lightning as of yet?
I've just played around a little bit. I've mostly just been using, you know, Bitcoin as a savings technology. But funny enough, a couple of weeks ago, I was putting a deposit on a place in Florida for the winter. And so I needed to send some money. And it, like, the guy I was dealing with wasn't super technically savvy. And, you know, in Canada, we don't have Cash App or Venmo. And then it kind of just dawned on me. I was like, wow, it's actually really difficult to send money, even just from Canada to the United States. I actually had to send an e-transfer to a friend who still has a Canadian bank account. And then he, because he needed some Canadian dollars, and then he kind of gave the deposit to the guy in the US for me. And I was like, you know, Lightning could solve this. So I'm, I think, you know, to echo what others are saying, is that over time, I think the need for Lightning is going to, you know, we're going to see that need. And, you know, I'm pretty excited about the future development of it.
Awesome. Yeah. Go ahead, Guy.
One thing that I think about Lightning that is misunderstood is that it's not merely just a payments network. It's literally an open network, like a liquidity network for anything that you can now code, because it does not have the limits of, like, the scripting limits that happen on Bitcoin layer one. So, like, this, the Lightning pool that just came out, the marketplace for auctioning off channel balances and bandwidth on the Lightning network, is actually an external application that you lock transactions to its execution. So this is every shitcoin's use case on Lightning. And like you can, the application is completely arbitrary. As long as the operator and the user is running the same code and they can verify it, well, then they'll just sign off and update the state. And all you actually need as far as a Bitcoin script is a time lock and multisig. And it's completely non-custodial. You're not trusting the operator, because if you don't believe like that they've updated the state honestly because your software says otherwise, you just don't sign it. Time lock runs out and you get your coins back. They've created something called they refer to it as a shadow chain, but basically it's essentially like a micro application specific side chain that you just lift your Bitcoin up into, and then it executes the application. And in this case, that application is an auction for where you need Lightning balance. And what this actually allows Lightning Labs to do, like to open channels and get balances right and loop in and loop out or whatever, is a painfully manual process right now, or at least has been. This is actually an automated auction system to batch everybody who needs a channel or has liquidity available to set a standard market fee. This is a financial product that is explicit to Bitcoin. For liquidity on Lightning, so that you can automate the opening and closing of channels at a real market price, like to actually figure out what that price is and then you can batch it. So technically you can pay a quote unquote interest, like a fee for this liquidity, but because you save so much space in batching it with everybody else in the auction, you could actually pay 1/10 of the Bitcoin fee to open the channel and actually make up the difference by paying for the capital on the auction, as opposed to just opening a channel yourself.
See, this is a perfect example of like the ideas and the innovation that's going on in Bitcoin that just, you know, if you're not in it, you have no idea that some of this stuff is happening and what it can enable in the future. And it's hard to imagine sometimes what it can enable in the future. So things like that, just that's one more reason to be bullish on Bitcoin.
And to add on to what Chris was saying, in terms of having those personal experiences, I can tell you when I was in college in the States, having been lived in a border city, to get money across the border, you always just have to declare what you bought. But when I lived down in Pittsburgh, only 4 hours away drive, to then just have a transaction and to really actually be exposed to what were the limited options to getting money across and to then be affected by it. A lot of people in this community are people that have been had these, not necessarily even traumatic events, just events where they've been just affected, where they're just like, why can't there just be a transaction right now? And there wasn't, or there, at least there was limited. And then now that they have this option, it's no wonder why people are so passionate about it, because they're like, it's getting done what I wasn't able to get done in the past. Moving on. Like, it's just, you know, like, just accept it. It's now an option where it wasn't before.
Awesome. Yeah, it's pretty astounding. I think we'll now segue into our next, because you know, we've got lots of great things to talk about. Before we do that, of course, anybody watching on YouTube, smash that like button, because again, it bumps up this video in front of more eyeballs. If you're on Twitter, retweet this, share it, whatever you need to do. We were between kind of 80 and 90 people live watching. So good to see so many people out. And I do see your comments. If I wasn't on the chat before, but as those comments come through, anything that catches my eye, I will try to feature kind of in the lower third on the live video. So yeah, keep those comments and chat going. So I guess I want to dive over to Jesse. Jesse, you had an interesting angle as to why you're bullish, and it's very topical. So dive in.
Yeah, sure. So it's funny, actually, Jason may have inadvertently hinted at it in his intro, but one thing that I find sort of very interesting that's going on, you know, out there in the world right there right now is that, you know, nothing seems certain. Nothing, you know, up is down, left is right. Is the news fake? You know, what's our monetary policy? What's money worth? You know, I think in Canada, we're due for a budget soon, and like, who knows what that's going to look like? So there's just question marks everywhere. You know, what's the outcome of the election? Was this, you know, an honest election, or you know, have there been some shady ongoings in the background? Are we going to uncover that? So just uncertainty is all over the place in the world, and literally every industry and field that you can imagine, it seems like, you know, is the science real? Well, you know, for, I won't say it. So just lots and lots of uncertainty out there. And Bitcoin is just this consistent, fixed point of reference that is just this beacon that's just saying, you know, this is the direction, this is the way. I'm going to keep lighting the way, and I'm going to keep telling you to go in the same direction. And that's it. It's super simple in that sense. It's completely known. It's completely expected. You know what characteristics the network is going to deliver for you in terms of minimizing trust and, you know, being permissionless so anyone can join it, and being censorship resistant. So you have all these qualities that are highly expected and certain. And then basically that's what gets me excited, because you contrast that against the world around you that is just a gong show. Everything's up in the air. Who knows what's happening out there? So that's my reason today to be bullish on Bitcoin.
It is interesting, because there's right now, there's this narrative kind of everywhere that you can't trust anything, and that like everything is so uncertain, and to have Bitcoin as like this beacon of truth juxtaposed upon this world that is just a giant question mark is I think that's why I see so many of my normie friends that feel all like, oh, they're sad about the world and everything's awful. And all my Bitcoiner friends are like, things are great. I love it. Everything's looking up. Everything's coming up me.
I recently called Bitcoin like the North Star, right? It's that fixed direction, that point of reference in the sky that you can just sort of follow. And that's part of, you know, for the cover of my book, how I have the wizard sort of finding his way home. So you have that fixed point of reference is just, it's something totally new to the world that we've never had before. And yeah. And then again, pitted against the backdrop of what the hell is going on, money printer go burr. You know, how many trillions are we going to print next month?
Yeah, but not only in terms of like what we've had, but I think it's a tip of the cap in terms of where we're heading and how we're evolving. Like when I work with older individuals or boomers, as the kids like to call them, I like to just not say we're changing, but we're evolving. And they're like tip of the cap to gold when certain things went down throughout history. And we're allowed to learn from history and move on from that and be better because of it and see, okay, we haven't hedged our bets on something. And now that we have, like we haven't had many opportunities to compare to a digital age where we've had all these other opportunities where there was the gold standard or there wasn't the gold standard, whatever it might be, something like gold where we often compare it to. Again, it just has a history of proving itself. And I think over the last 11 plus years that Bitcoin has been around, like it's proven itself. That's it. Like it's just constantly day in and day out doing what it was set out to do, you know? Yeah, so 100%. Like, that's why we're all here.
Chris, how are you feeling about Bitcoin as this like beacon of truth and I guess stability in a world that is gone crazy?
I think 2020 has highlighted the key value proposition of Bitcoin, of a stable, credible monetary policy. And I thought it was so fitting that when we had this most recent halving, it was at the same time that the Fed and central banks globally were just pumping crazy liquidity into the system. And then a couple months ago, it was either Justin Trudeau or the finance minister was saying, you know, now is not the time for austerity. Well, we supposedly had a 10-year bull market, right? So when, if that wasn't the time for austerity and that was not the time for austerity, when is the time for austerity? And I think everyone here knows the answer to that is that there's never going to be a time for austerity. And so kind of like I alluded to my article, I became very concerned with the cash that we had in our bank account. And I feel much safer in a decentralized programmatic money issuance versus something that is just completely at the whim of politicians and central bankers. So, you know, just to kind of reiterate, I think this year has really highlighted why a stable, credible monetary policy is so important, and why anyone competing with Bitcoin is not going to win.
and whim is a good word for that, because, you know, although they like to come out and say, you know, this is our inflation target, we're going to set the rate to so-and-so level, it's expected to be at this level, that doesn't change the fact that on a whim, they can go a different direction and nothing can stop them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, I was just gonna say, and you know, the funny thing, I always laugh when I hear inflation's at 0.5%. Again, I think everyone here understands that that's just a load of crap. All you have to do is look at, you know, the stock market, gold, Bitcoin, real estate prices in Canada are just absolutely surging right now. So anyone, even groceries for that matter, you know, my Costco bills keep going up. So anyone who thinks there's, you know, 0.5% inflation is kidding themselves.
It's insane that that StatsCan would come out with that. Again, those that didn't see it, again, Stats Canada coming out saying inflation in Canada has only been 0.5% for the past few years. Guy, I was going to ask, what's that website where it aggregates? I know it's US only, but what's the website that you always float?
I was just about to mention that. The Chapwood, Chapwood, chapwoodindex.com. And it's just a flat, like the paper, if you look at the how to break down the CPI, you would think it would be a really simple measure, right? It's actually 107 pages. How they 107 pages to figure out how to define, and it's all just twisting workarounds to make, you know, oh, the product got a little bit better, so technically you're not buying the same thing. Like, I mean, it's all just ways to cover it up. And every single time they add it, somehow the inflation, every time they change it or they make some new rule, it gets less inflationary. It's interesting that it happens every single time.
It's also laughable that you could try to boil down the inflation rate for, you know, an entire country to a single stat. Right? You know, a person, sorry, Guy, we're going to use some Canadian references here because I think the rest of us are Canadian, but you could, you know, the cost for someone in BC versus someone in Toronto versus someone in Halifax, if they're all buying more or less the same goods or paying rent or have their mortgage, it's going to be completely different if we're assuming, you know, same size house, same size condo, whatever it may be. And, you know, we're all expected to, this number captures our locality, captures our, you know, our inflation. It's, that part to me gets me going sometimes. In addition to all the messing around that goes on with how they calculate it.
What's crazy about this, like the concept of like Bitcoin in this, or just kind of the totem of Bitcoin in this environment right now, is Murray Rothbard talks about this. And there's also a really great piece by Hans Hermann Hoppe called The Yield from Money Held Reconsidered. And it's talking about what the role of money is in society. Why does money exist? Why do people, when, you know, the shit hits the fan, why do they run to just holding cash? And it's because one of the most critical roles of a store of value of an actual monetary asset is a hedge against uncertainty, is that you run to money and you hold money when you have no idea what the future holds, because it is the most reliable, most stable, most trustworthy asset. And we are seeing the breakdown of trust in all of our political institutions. I mean, it is splintering 1,000 different ways. And the trust of our quote unquote monetary masters is being abused at a ridiculous level. And it's specifically becoming a political tool for control. And that is that is antithetical to the very reason money exists in the first place.
Exactly.
It's making it the least certain thing to have exposure to. And to have something that with such powerful guarantees, 21 million, no questions asked, everybody's defending it. To have that exist in that environment is one of the most potent black holes of value suck that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to like being in some sort of an environment where there's so much uncertainty, to have something that is so simple to go from A to Z and to be able to explain to an individual is so key in a time of uncertainty. Because then that's where that value is, where people can just understand, compute, and execute, versus when you've got this thing where the amount of emails I got from the like these huge companies in Canada that stated that everything they were doing was going to be in my in the interest of my safety and whatnot through COVID, and the results were nothing. It was just like you said, uncertainty. That's what it was, but they were hedging their bets on the uncertainty. So they're getting ahead of it, but then it's like, well, I saw through that versus something like Bitcoin, which is just persevering and just continuing, doesn't have a head that's getting paid X amount of millions of dollars and is gearing their, you know, the words through a PR company towards some shareholders. No, it just persists, just keeps doing what it was set out to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I wanted to
all it needs to do is survive and it wins.
and what's Bitcoin really good at doing? It's really good at surviving.
Yeah, thank you, shitty emails from the big banks in Canada. Those are the worst.
Yeah, it's amazing that everything that gets thrown Bitcoin's way, it almost doesn't even stumble. It just keeps doing what it's doing. If anything, it's just the people around it that just parse the information and maybe take a minute to figure out what's going on and then realize that Bitcoin doesn't give a shit and it's still functioning exactly as it should. It's really amazing. I wanted to dive into another topic here, and I'm going to pass it to Chris in a moment here. Again, if you're watching, smash the thumbs up button because that's going to get this in front of a lot more people. I've been seeing it peaking up above 90 live watchers. So thank you guys for joining in. I see the chat blown up. I'm trying to click on a bunch of these chat messages to bring them up. So yeah, keep chatting away. And yeah, this has been a great conversation. I'm going to jump to Chris because Chris, given your company Snappa and what you guys are doing, you wanted to chat a little bit about, and Jason, actually, this is also a topic you wanted to jump on. So we'll jump back and forth, but we'll start with Chris. You wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, why do have this as a reserve asset and why you're so bullish on this in general?
Yeah. So, you know, as a company who's profitable, which nowadays is pretty rare. No one seems to generate profits anymore. But over the last couple of years, you know, we've been profitable and we've been, you know, saving money. And then eventually you get to the point where you have a pretty, you know, sizable amount of cash in the company bank account. And then you come to the Michael Saylor realization that you're sitting on a melting ice cube. And the coronavirus in particular is when I really realized like we had an issue here. Our interest rate on our savings account was basically nothing. and, you know, as an entrepreneur, we quit our jobs, we worked our ass off, we put in tons of hours. And we built up all of this value. And for us, it was super important to actually preserve our hard work and our value. And we didn't want to, you know, put that money in the stock market because, you know, that could have downturns. And, you know, so we started going down the list. And then you see this thing, this Bitcoin thing, which is just so, again, it's just so stable. And yeah, there's some short-term volatility. But we realized like this is just the perfect reserve asset where, you know, essentially what we're doing is we're keeping enough fiat on hand to handle any sort of short-term obligation as well as, you know, a bit of an emergency fund. And then anything beyond that, you just buy Bitcoin and you watch that that purchasing power not only remain stable, but actually increase because all the fiat is just melting all around it. And you know, so far there's not that many companies that are doing this. Obviously, the big announcement was MicroStrategy and Square, but you better believe that more and more public companies are going to be doing the same thing, and that's just going to create a massive floor and price pressure on Bitcoin. So, you know, I tweeted this the other week. It's just like Bitcoin just makes corporate treasury freaking easy because all you need is to keep some fiat on hand for the short term stuff. And you just buy Bitcoin with the rest and you don't have to think about anything.
Once again, Bitcoin fixes this.
Yeah. I mean, Bitcoin funnels currently we're forced into playing these games with our savings just to survive retirement, right? It's a product of a shitty money that we even have to think about investing our money to make it through retirement. And Bitcoin removes that hurdle of having to roll those dice and figure out how you're going to survive retirement, in that it's actually finite and you can actually have a finite amount of the base currency and just hold it. And with a deflationary environment with technology, you'll be able to buy more in the future. Your purchasing power is preserved and over time grows. And you know, that's kind of one of the major points of why Bitcoin even exists in the first place. I did want to say we're up to over 100 live viewers. So thank you guys for joining in and watching. If you're just joining in, smash that like button, give this a share, retweet wherever you are. Stoked to see a bunch of people watching this. Now, Chris, I wanted to beckon back to your point about the reserves. What was the reaction from people that were non-Bitcoiners when you mentioned this to them? Like, what is the general kind of consensus when it comes to people when you say, hey, we took half of our liquid cash reserves and put it into Bitcoin?
Yeah, so it's funny. I had a few people message me and be like, you know, that's a boss move. I have investors, so we can't really do that. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of people still just look at Bitcoin as a speculative asset. And, you know, I don't blame them, just because it does take some time and research to really get the value. But again, once you understand Bitcoin, you like Bitcoin, fiat becomes risky and Bitcoin is not risky, right? And so I feel like until people just put in that base level amount of effort to really understand what's going on, I think it's hard for them to wrap their heads around it. And they're probably still going to think that, you know, we're just being risky and whatnot. But that was one of the reasons why I wrote that article, so that, you know, I can share this around with people and say, you know, this isn't just some magic internet money, as Jesse likes to. but you know, there's some sound fundamental reasons why this is a prudent thing to do, as opposed to just some, you know, pure speculative investment that we're taking on.
Yeah. Now I want to jump over to Jason. What are you've been watching around the space? What's happening with a lot of this? We've seen all the news about, obviously, Michael Saylor's the big one because he's such a giga chad and he's dumping hundreds of millions of dollars into Bitcoin. And you know, like that what was it? The quarterly call that he had, the investors call, where he's basically, you know, you know, he strutted into that meeting like nothing else. But what are your thoughts on what's happening? What have you been taking away from this and kind of this trend towards more companies doing this?
Well, I think the quote that I took away from it was what actually Dan Held said, which when he met with Michael, which was that it's the $250 billion solution to a $250 trillion problem. And to take something and consolidate it, that's what we're witnessing, which is there's these different markets that Bitcoin is slowly consuming. And you can see it in different avenues on these different companies that are investing so heavily in Bitcoin. And you're the more, it's just further proving everybody's point when these additional companies sign on board. And more importantly, you can see their angle. So what was amazing about that conversation the other day with Saylor is that he just point blank went from A to Z in terms of what his logic was on purchasing Bitcoin. Like, so it's just out there now. And so, you know, that's what we take from. And, you know, these people that worship Warren Buffett in the stock market, they look at what he says whenever he releases his statements. It's no different. And the fact that it's just continuing to just keep taking on these additional markets and then just absorbing them. Again, this is why we're all here, because we're seeing it happen. We're watching it. And to us, it's so obvious.
It's interesting because we kind of made this leap where last time it, in 2017, everything was very retail driven. It was just individuals buying up Bitcoin through whatever ramps they could find. And everybody kind of thought, well, nation states is the next leap, but didn't think anywhere in between. And now we're seeing that in between. So I kind of like the idea and align with the idea that this new bull market is going to be very much driven by a combination of retail and retail people that didn't get in last time around, and now corporate treasury. And I think if it was just retail that was driving it, we may not see the kind of multiples that we saw previously. But given that we're likely going to see retail and corporate treasury, it's going to be potentially crazier than many expect. May be pretty wild. Now, the interesting thing that I find with this, and I've been chatting with a few people about this, is that it's this weird inverse where if, let's say, in the next Bitcoin epoch, 4 years later, after the next halving, nation states start trying to add Bitcoin to their treasuries, the companies that are buying up right now, the Michael Saylors, the Snappas, all of these early companies that are buying, some nation states may not be able to purchase as much Bitcoin as the companies that are doing it now in this epoch. And if you look back further, the companies buying in this epoch may not be able to purchase as much Bitcoin as some of the early individuals that were into Bitcoin earlier. And so you get into an instance where individual people, at least for a period of time, may have more money than nation states, which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing it already in places like Venezuela, where you see the people getting, wheelbarrows worth of cash and whatnot. And I think at the end of the day, though, it's all relative. It comes down to your end result if you're getting it. God bless him. I love the fact that Saylor was saying he's going to hold for 100 years, but it still then just justifies what you're doing versus you see all these examples about people to not believe in what these different currencies are, whether we're Canadian or American. We all look at both, and you just see these instances where the common person can't put together what's going on. Like, you can have a question whether they're a hard believer in Bitcoin, cool, maybe not, but at least when you just sit down and get down to like the fundamentals and have them talk out the rationality, it's hilarious how many people that don't get Bitcoin are like, wait, so where are they getting the money from? Who's paying the money? Who's paying these bills? Who's footing these bills? Like, these are just general people. They're not heavily into Bitcoin, but they're suddenly, you can see all these things with the day and age of everybody having have access to the internet in the palm of their hand. They're able to ask these questions, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of answers to this. Like, it's very much so just throwing money at a problem, but not having any sort of accountability. Where all of a sudden Bitcoin, it's the opposite.
And there's a big difference between throwing money that, you just create with a snap of your finger versus actual resources, right? The goal of an economy is to efficiently mobilize resources. And when you're just throwing money at the problem, you're not creating more labor. If you're building houses, you're not creating more lumber, but you're just making it harder to get the lumber to where it needs to be, if indeed it needs to go there.
Yeah. Basically the economy is signaling and screaming as loudly as it can that we're destroying resources and that we have a massive shortage. And to just print a whole bunch of currency to close the gap is just cooking the books to make it look like we made a profit.
Yeah, and that's what history's constantly shown us is people, when we were talking about going back to cash, it's because they want to get out the intermediaries. They want it to be P2P. If only there was an electronic version out there that could solve this problem. Whoa. They just want something to be like, I hand you money and you take that money and you get that value, and not like, again, whatever it might be, rather than, let's make sure that our bank doesn't stop our transaction from going through and whatnot. And if it's over $1,500, we need to call somebody. Like, there's so many different things where it's just like, I think as an adult, I can just make this happen. I don't need this person to just be this intermediary, or not even just a person, this entity in multiple layers. Like, it just not even for my security or safety, it's pointless. We're doing laps right now.
There's something that Chris said that I think is so beautiful in illustrating the fact that Bitcoin is so perfect in its role of money. Said it's so simplifies our treasury strategy. Is that before you had to become, you had to figure out where to put it in the stock market. You had to come up with some, you know, money manager or something.
Yeah, like you had to be like an asset manager.
Some index fund or something. You got to figure out which one's going to perform the best. And somehow you have to know about all these financial markets. That is literally destroying the purpose of money. Like, the purpose of money is to enable, by having that, or the result of money, by having that independent universal store of value, you create the specialization of labor so that people don't have to know shit about financial markets to hold their value. It's so that you can have a financial market and everybody else can go off and do their own thing. They can just produce profit at their restaurant or at their software business or whatever it is, and they simply hold money. To destroy the money so that you have to also become a financial specialist at the same time is to just abuse, it's just to destroy the specialization of labor. Everybody has to do whatever it is that they do, plus learn the stock market, plus learn how to build some retirement structure, or figure out how index funds work.
And which is an overcomplication of something that is simply laid out. Like, it's funny that we're now in Canada going back to teaching financial literacy, but it's like, if we're talking about that, money in, money out. Like, there's all these people that talk about that, and yet suddenly as we age, there's this like, but there's like this offset option where we talk about, like, you know, bonds and what, and it's like, okay, let's just simplify that. It's like, it's funny, when even the COVID-19 broke out, I was reaching out to a couple of individuals that were like part of my local government. I'm just like, where's this money coming from? Like, who's paying for what? And like, it was always just like, we'll talk about it when we deal with it. And like, to me, it's just like, imagine if you had a checking account or a savings account in a Canadian bank, and you were just like, very like, oh, I'll talk about it when I deal with it. Like, you can't just randomly buy like property or like commit to any sort of investment where it, like, there's all these different avenues in which, like, so it's funny how like us being able to just look at Bitcoin and stick to those principles, they're doing the opposite. They're just shooting themselves in the foot, because it's like, you're proving our point. It's accountability. It's measurable. It's a quantifiable asset that is just purely transferable globally.
To economize means to like figure out how best to use resources. And it explicitly means I'm deciding between a trade-off. I'm deciding not to use resources here and to instead use them over here. So to just print money, to just figure, just to fill in the gap everywhere, is literally to direct economic resources without making economic decisions, without actually deciding what any of this is worth, or what the trade-off, where the cost is. It's just like, well, there's no cost. Just throw it. Just go. Just do stuff, and we'll figure it out later.
The word cost is actually a really interesting word when it comes to money, and something I've tried to talk about a little bit. That if money comes from nothing, right? If there's no cost to creating it, then it, what is it really bringing to the table? Right, there has to be some tangible baseline for value if you're going to make those trades that you're talking about. And then also, sort of back to Guy's other point, you know, money shouldn't be, and to Jason's point and Chris's point, money shouldn't be that complicated. It should be, you know, your baseline expectation for, you know, I need to park value and I can put it there and I know that it's going to maintain value, you know, call it in line with the economy. You shouldn't have to think about it. Right now, cash, fiat, it's transitory in its value, right? It's fleeting. Obviously, it's depreciating more so than doing anything else, but it's completely unreliable. And that's a huge problem for, you know, again, Chris, you're running this profitable company, which in itself is a huge feat in a world where you're competing against these debt-fueled companies. So kudos to you for that. To have this bedrock that you can rely upon and sleep soundly at night, because you know when you wake up in the morning, you know what you have. It brings a certain peace of mind that is super important. Maybe I'm getting a little off track here, but that the consistency, right? I was talking earlier about uncertainty versus certainty, right? Having that certainty, having that consistency, it makes a huge difference in your mind frame and your approach to life and your business dealings. And it can result in very positive changes in social outcomes that we aren't used to in this world right now because we live in this debauched fiat society.
Yeah, one other comment. The other day, or it was a couple of weeks ago, someone was on Twitter kind of like defending the fiat system, saying, well, just all you have to do is just, you know, buy index funds if you want to, you know, maintain your value, whatever. And I was like, well, like, what an ignorant, such an ignorant thing to say, right? Because, you know, like, I have a finance background, so, you know, I understand that. But to expect, you know, every single sit to know how index funds work, and then the other problem is if they go into a bank, the bank just rapes them with fees and bullshit mutual funds. So I just thought it was a really ignorant thing to say that, like, everyone should know how index funds work. And if not, it's their problem kind of thing.
So it's like
that mindset takes money for granted. And that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
It takes the underlying, like, what is money? That question, it takes the thing or the entity that is money or the institution, whatever we want to call it, it takes money for granted.
Yeah. Let's say, like,
they just have a pre-filled PDF document that they have to submit to headquarters and then find out if it's worth the value. It's a weird, like I love the fact that there's everybody out there saying one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin, because then you can establish a value and the market will sort itself out. If somebody tomorrow, if McDonald's tomorrow goes, we're going to change minimum wage in Canada to $5 an hour. Like, everyone's just going to go, no, you're not, because that's not enough. Like, or if they're going to say it's going to be $50 an hour, it's like, well, that seems like it's too much. Like, so it's going to come down and up, but at least there's a value associated to a cost. And yet to something that just replicates and is like 25 times leverage like the banks are, just to anybody just doesn't make, well, not anybody, but a lot of people just doesn't make sense, because, like, where is it all going?
Policies like that treat the economy like a mad science experiment, right? Yeah. Like, it doesn't treat the economy with respect.
Well, one of the silly things about that comment is that, like, oh, we'll just buy an index fund. It's like, oh, so we have to replace, like, the purpose of money is to hold value, like, to get it today so that I can use it tomorrow. And now I need an index fund to do that, do the value, like, do the job of money. It's like, why isn't money doing the job of money? Why do I need an index fund? And it's like, oh, well, it should just be a basket of stocks or a basket of other goods or commodities or something. It's like, what the hell do you think? What do you think money is? It is that good, which is backed by the entire pool of economic goods. It is a basket of everything, and you're just gonna, like, make it a basket of, like, five things because, like, those are better. Like, money is the good which you exchange for everything in the economy that builds up around that money. It's the basket of all goods that exist. Like, I don't want five goods. I want the money. Like, I want the thing that's backed by everything.
Yeah, and I can understand if there wasn't a relatable analogy, but there is. There's a lot of relatable histories in the past. Like, my grandfather bought his cottage up in the cottage country in Ontario, and you would look at, like, his receipt, essentially, and it looks like he went to the local market and got written up, on, you know, it's like house taxes, property taxes, you know, total two signatures and moving on. And now there's all these entities, and there are these, what seems to be on one end, these complicated factors, but in reality are just kind of blowhards that are just, like, trying to just have their Photoshop photo on the billboard, and they're trying to sell this service. And it's just like, can we not agree that, like, X amount of dollars equals X amount of dollars? Like, we don't have to just add all these intermediaries just to have a discussion about a purchase. I feel like if I want to buy a house and I have the money, it should just go to that person. I get the house, they get the money. But it's like, no, it's not that easy, but it is.
One of the things that a lot of newcomers into Bitcoin, and again, there's going to be lots and lots of newcomers into Bitcoin in the coming year, 18 months, year, decades down the road even, is they don't understand the nature of why the money is even broken. And they look at things like Stephanie Kelton's book about MMT, and you know, we'll print more money and we'll just give it to everybody. Yeah, it's just points on the scoreboard, and the scorekeeper has no incentive whatsoever to manipulate.
We take away points, we give them, but they don't affect anything. They don't affect you, or they don't affect us. We're not actually involved, even though we take and give points. We're not actually involved.
And I try to point out that, again, as Guy has been alluding to this whole time, is that money is just meant to represent the total of goods and services that the existing people can put together with the limited resources at their fingertips. And you can't have any more resources, goods and services than are limited by the people and their productivity and the resources available to them. And so by inflating the money supply, if you were to inflate the money supply equally to everyone, it's a net zero gain because there's the same number of goods and services available. But what happens in inflating the money is that it gets siphoned to certain areas. Basically, somebody is saying that we don't believe in what everybody else values, where you have placed your value, what you have accumulated, what you've chosen to purchase, what you've chosen to create. We don't trust you to place and allocate your value appropriately. So we're going to reallocate that value for you and funnel those goods and resources in what we believe is a more efficient way, which by and large is not possible.
Yeah, the major assumption in that is that they think they have all the information to decide what's best for each and every individual when that's just impossible.
Well, it's the pretense of knowledge. Like they cannot, because they're not making an economic trade-off. They're not making a decision. Like to print, like let's say like over the course of my life, I like make $2 million or something like that. And like, what does that mean? It means that I have made explicit decisions trading off what I decided to learn, what direction I decided to make my life, what dream I chased, which skills I spent day and night digging into and learning about, whether or not I fed my family or, you know, skipped a couple of meals to, you know, pay for a trip or somebody's medical bills. Like I've made explicit hard choices in which I have made my value worth, like my assessment of what is important to me, and I have put it on the money that I have interacted with and all of the people that I have interacted with in the economy. I have influenced it every single time that I have made a trade with somebody else, because then it's explicit not trading somewhere else.
It's almost like your lifetime ledger.
It's my lifetime value that is influencing the economy. For someone to print $1 trillion is to delete the influence of my entire life from existence. Yeah. It means that you
make it worthless.
Shit. It's all worthless. It's all just crap. It's just like, we don't care about your decisions. We don't care about your values. We don't care that you saved your family instead of being frugal or like going into debt or like making some frivolous expenditure somewhere. We don't care that you made those trade-offs. We are going to delete the entire lives and the entire value measures of tens of millions of people like that, because you are all stupid, you all suck, and we are the gods. Like that is literally what that means.
It's profound arrogance. It's profound arrogance. And it's not even just deleting the decisions, the economic decisions of everybody today, but the aggregate of history and what's built up until now. The people that are in charge of central bank currencies are effectively saying, we know better than all of monetary history or at least the current monetary history that has gotten us to this point. And again, the arrogance in thinking that can be done is unparalleled in my eyes.
Yeah, it's almost like either the tobacco industry with lung cancer or the NFL with CTE. It's like you give a person 5-10 minutes, you sit them down and you ask them like, okay, so there's this industry and they're leveraging like basically nothing and they're getting everything back. Do you think that's right? And like a lot of people be like, yeah, this seems right. Or like heads, trauma, repetition, it's gotta like not work out to anything bad, right? It's like a lot of people are gonna be like, yeah, I feel like that could work out to something bad. But yet, to God forbid, if you question any of those two endpoints, it's like, well, no, let's now discuss it. And once you get the results, it's like, well, it's not a matter of even I told you so. It's like, let's now like utilize this and let's use this as something that we don't have, like, especially for Canada, where we don't have any gold reserves. Why not? Let's hedge our, like, something that we're missing out on, you know, like something that let's be ahead of the game rather than, oh, we'll just take Bank of Canada's wait and see approach and just like, you know, print money on it.
Did you see that Bank of Canada little 1 minute or 30-second video they put up a couple days ago or a week ago where they're like, we're innovative. Here's what we're doing to be innovative.
We're
innovative.
Our website has drop shadows.
They're acting like they're like a court system that can like prolong a court case. It's like, no, hold on. This is the economy. You can't just wait and see. Oh, we'll wait until everything buffs out. No, hold on. You're called the Bank of Canada. Don't worry about it. We're good. We're gonna wait this amount. We're gonna take a knee. You're down 20 points. Why are we taking a knee right now? So again, maybe they got Stephanie to consult, you know, because she's all about points and just making them up out of like whims and feelings, I guess.
Oh, Stephanie. Always. I love the dunking
Stephanie
on Bitcoin
and
Twitter.
Keith are the two Stephanie, more hated right now.
Stephanie, Keith. Quad four. Actually, hold on. Before we get out of hand, given what's going on right now, can we all just once again, appreciate my Peter Schiff framed tweet from January 6th of this year. I'm just going to read it back so that we can really appreciate. I got it.
I want to hear it.
Notice that it's in gold.
It should be.
So this was January 6th of this year. For those Bitcoin bugs excited about Bitcoin's 4% rally in 2020, think about this. Hashtag gold is also up by about the same percentage this year, only with significantly less downside risk. If this is the best rally Bitcoin can muster, how will it ever hit 50K, let alone 1 million? I love it. I'm going to carry this forever.
I was going to go down in history. And I got exposed to the guy who's the gold guy in Toronto. If anybody knows who he is, he's this guy who just peddles, like, he's the cash man, actually. That's his thing. And he talks about like gold. And it's so funny. When I saw Peter Schiff's website, I just had ringing in the same thing, that same like kind of desperation, like come and get it. Like they're just like a used car. No offense to a used car salesman, but it's just, it's such a push.
Oh, just capping on used car salesmen. So what's up?
Sorry. Oh, I didn't know. But it's just like, to me, from somebody who's looking for results, like it's the complete opposites. It's just like, oh, there's anger in this society. Let me just like get my mic going and let's just exploit this versus like the math equal plus Bitcoin equals like results. Like, you know, we did it.
Yes. The
20,000 in Canada.
Yes,
sir. Ryan is so left out here. He's the only non-Canadian on the show.
I can appreciate it.
The funny thing about Peter Schiff, for me personally, he was the one who basically like red-pilled me on Austrian economics like back in 2007.
Me too.
Like, I watched his video blogs religiously when I was like, my career was just getting started. And it was like, oh my God, he like this perspective on economics and it actually makes sense. I studied economics in undergrad and it's, you know, it was all this theory and I could never reconcile that with how things actually happened in the real world. And here comes this guy and he's like, oh yeah, I predicted that crash. And he's got these, you know, great videos, presentations where he's just, you know, domino after domino after domino telling you how it went. And so for him to really, you know, get economics, but then not be able to reconcile, you know, money and Bitcoin and why Bitcoin is just a far superior money to gold, it blows my mind. I mean, I get that he has his business and it's obviously, you know, he's got to sell gold. That's his business. And, you know, gold is fine. It's, you know, it wouldn't be the top of my list anymore. I you know, I was a gold bug when I was sort of getting started in my career. Mm-hmm. But like to not subsequently make that leap with his, like, the intellect that you know he has, or Guy, you know, Guy, maybe you agree with me on this, like, you would think he has the capacity.
He's
a super bright guy. Like, I've seen him speak in person when he came to Toronto again. This was, you know, 2009, 2010, whatever it was when he was here. Like, he has it, and then he just can't make that leap, and it's so obvious, and it's so, like, perfectly fitting with his values. And he can't do it, and it kills me.
I think there's
but
two
his
things.
Son can. His son can.
I think there's two things about it.
I just want to say I'm like there's shift gold, but I'm long shift sats.
I think it's a combination of Peter Schiff does not have the slightest clue of what's going on inside his computer. Like everything that is digital is just magic fairy dust, and it is unimportant and it's meaningless.
He just made the boomer threshold.
Yes, yeah. He just
threshold of the get it or you don't.
Any of it.
He's just like, I'm gonna hard no.
But I gotta admit, I've been surprised. I've slowly begun to like identify more. Like it makes more sense to me now. Why so many gold bugs do not understand the value case of Bitcoin. And it's because they misnarrowed where the key value case is. They basically went back to, oh, because it's physical. And they never went deeper to figure out what is it about it being physical that makes it worth something. Like, why is physical better than paper? What's the difference between those two things? And the thing is that the fact that it is physical means that it has unbelievably high assurances. There are these laws of thermodynamics. There are these atomic characteristics of gold that make it incredibly difficult to change. It has monetary assurances and a monetary policy that is completely separate from all of its representations and that can actually be verified in the real world. And once you begin to realize that it's the degree of assurances that gold has in its monetary policy, in the fact that it exists in a scarce amount and has certain set of characteristics, you realize that cryptography and consensus can give those assurances as well. And in fact, give those assurances in a far easier to prove, far more concrete way. It is all just an abstraction of the fact that you can't make more gold. What happens when you can replicate that in the digital and you can do it better? Then you have, as Michael Saylor says, magic gold. You have gold with magical powers.
Yeah, I think the ultimate aha moment for Bitcoin so far was when Pomp was talking to Cramer, in where he even admitted like he doesn't fully understand Bitcoin, but he sees the value to hand it over to his son. And whatnot, where I just, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but Peter is doubling down on just not understanding. If he just said, like, I don't understand it, but I see the value of my son moving on, that's great. Now you see the bridge to it. But he's like, no, I disagree with my son. And like, it's a weird little way of going about it versus like, at least Cramer was like, hey, I see the value in taking something like Bitcoin, which I don't fully understand. But if my son's coming to it, like he just has the that self-awareness to just be like, if he's interested in it, like I was taught in business school that the individuals that are the most, I guess, the most manipulative of the market are the 18 to 25 year olds. You know, or even younger, a little bit younger or so, because those are the people that are given that money that has that non-discretional value. And then like, they don't see the value of it and they're putting it towards something. So, you know, I love that those are coming more and more happening up. I love it.
Awesome. Well, guys, I'm going to start wrapping it out here. First off, I want to say thank you to every single one of you for joining me. I really had a great conversation. We've had like between 110, 120 live viewers for the last little bit here. So thanks everybody that's watching. Again, I've been watching the chat and everything. Thank you for all the the mentions and everything going on there. Everybody's having a good time over there. What I wanted to do is go down the line, basically the reverse of what we did last time. I'll let each person have a closing thought before we close out their screen. And if you want to stick around for to say a goodbye after I end the stream, then feel free to. But we'll do reverse order. We'll start with Jason this time. Jason, do you want to leave some closing thoughts since you were just chatting?
Well, first off, I definitely smashed the like button for you, so I made sure to subscribe. But in terms of just closing thoughts, it just still comes down to what we've been in this for, which is being able to identify a value and being able to execute on it. And that's what, you know, we're here for. So I'm really glad that I got, you know, kind of just a backup of different examples and different ways of looking at executing a value tonight. Like I now have a broader scope, which is hard to believe that I thought I had a huge scope on things, but now I really have expanded on that, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of months, if not years.
Awesome. Looks like you're just diving further down the rabbit hole. Jason, thank you for being here, and I'm gonna close out your window and we'll jump to Chris here.
Have a good one.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin has just been incredibly de-risked since 2017. There's no question that it's the...
Oh, I think we lost Chris's sound. Chris, can you just restart there? It was a little choppy.
Yeah, sorry. Having some connection issues for some reason. But yeah, no, I think Bitcoin has been incredibly de-risked since 2017. I think Michael Saylor said this. It's like, when you understand Bitcoin, you don't put 1% in. And again, this is not financial advice, but I'm kind of at that realization right now. And something else that it was either you, Ben, or Guy had mentioned it, that I think a lot of people overlooked corporations in the path to Bitcoinization or hyper-Bitcoinization. And so I think that is going to be a very key part of this cycle. And kind of like Preston talks about that, you know, who knows when, like we could reach escape velocity this cycle. And so you don't want to be on the wrong side of that.
Yeah, 100%. Chris, thank you so much for being here. I'm gonna close out your window and we'll jump over to Jesse, so.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
All right, so, yeah, Jesse, you're up.
So I guess a couple things for me to Jason's point. He was talking about the, you know, the scope of Bitcoin and the things you learn. One of the things that as you get more familiar with Bitcoin, you come to realize that Bitcoin is an excellent teacher, right? It ends up teaching you various lessons because it has these hard-coded set of principles that are unshakable and unfailing, and there's something for each individual to take away from those. So I think that's super important. And then in terms of, you know, my opening point about why I was bullish today, this stall started as, okay, why are we all bullish today? I talked about uncertainty in the world around us, and to Bitcoin, while to many it may be unfamiliar, the last thing it is uncertain. It is very definite. You know what you're getting with it. It's just a matter of putting it in context and why it exists, how it came into being, and what it does, and what value it brings, and the lessons it teaches, and how it can affect your behavior as, you know, your preferred basis for commerce, if that's what you so choose to use as your preferred basis of commerce going forward. So every reason imaginable to be excited and bullish about Bitcoin. I'll give myself a plug here, and that's why I wrote the book, Magic Yes. Internet Money, a book about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
What is money? Find your answer Yes. to that.
Yes, so, check out the interview that I did with Jesse as well. That's in on my channel.
And so with that, I will sign off.
Thank you, Jesse. All right, Guy, you're up. Man. Last one.
All right. So one of the really big reasons I'm bullish right now is basically what Michael Saylor has kicked off. Like one of those things, like Bitcoin is an odd thing, right? It's a very out there asset, and there is absolutely this scope of like social permission is that can we legitimately look into this? Is this a toy? Is this something we need to stay away from? Nobody wants to be the first person through the wall, but at the same time, nobody wants to be the last. And Michael Saylor basically gave the entire corporate world the loudest, most screaming, like hardcore conviction level of social permission to take this thing seriously. And as they start to move into it, there's not a sensible boardroom of a $1 billion company right now that is not talking about it, that it is not on the table. And that is going to make this whole thing crazy. We are a baby in comparison to the environment that it's now getting into. And with that, I want to slow things down a little bit for everybody who hasn't been in a bull market. This is my fourth one, I guess, now. It's really exciting, but it's also really fucking scary. Like, it gets stressful really fast, and you'll realize that what was a little bit of money turned into a lot of money really quickly. And you need to prepare before we get there. If you don't have a proper backup of your keys, if you haven't withdrawn from your custodian, if you don't know how to, you know, back up your own seed, that is when things get really nerve-wracking and you're realizing just how much exposure you have to someone else's fault. Take the time, learn it now. Watch BTC Sessions tutorials. Like, he's got a freaking billion of them. I've got a couple of them now on YouTube. I'm way behind, but I'm getting there. I'm going to be adding to it. Listen to Bitcoin Audible, obviously. Mm-hmm. Learn now, back up your keys, get a hardware wallet, like, be in control of your money now before this gets out of control, cause it's going to get crazy. Kind of exciting to be back into it, but you know, there's a little bit of beads of sweat too, cause we're definitely getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Guy, thank you so much for being on. Always, always great chatting with you. And be sure to check him out, everybody. I'll sign you out here. I'll say my closing words here. Thanks, buddy. So everybody, again, thank you so much for watching. This got a lot busier in the chat than I thought. But that's great. That's awesome. So thank you guys so much for watching. As always on YouTube, if you're there, like, subscribe, share, all of those things. So important. It really helps the channel. It really helps get this in front of as many eyeballs as possible. And I can see that you guys were doing it today because of the number of viewers. Again, if you're on Twitter, wherever, share this out. Always super helpful. If you want to help out the show in another way, you can hit up the sponsors I mentioned down below. That was Ledin, CryptoCloaks, Kobo, BitRefill. They're all down here, along with the Twitter profiles of everybody that was a guest today. Really appreciated all of them being on. And if you really liked what you saw, you can always drop me a Lightning Network tip if you're playing with that. That's at my tippin.me page. That's tippin.me/@BTC Sessions. With that, I'm out. Have yourselves a wonderful day, a wonderful evening, and I'll see you next time for your daily session.
HODL by Bitcoin.